so nice, so that's what I like. Is that
I stand it here, hot, and you just don't stop it, and just get ready to jam. The Disco Daddy Wide World of Hip Hop Radio Show. Every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, only on 5Live.com, with special guests every week. Don't miss it.
All right. Hello out there. Disco Daddy here. Welcome to another edition of Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop and R&B. If you've been following us, and I know you have, you're aware that we have been documenting the history of West Coast hip hop through our interviews with icons, legends, and people who played major roles in its development, not only here in Los Angeles, but up and down the West Coast. Our guest today is one of the persons who exemplifies the pioneering spirit that existed in the West Coast a long time ago, and he rarely gets the credit and attention he deserves, but we're going to do that for him today. His name is, we call him Nasty Ness. His name is Ness Rodriguez, and he hails from Seattle, am I correct?
Yeah, originally, Philippines is my roots, but if you're talking about the States, Seattle, Washington, started back in 1970. Okay. I was 10 years old, man, and that's when I bought my first album on vinyl. Can you believe that? Out of my own money, okay. I got to tell you this, $2. I had $2, and I was in the airport in Hawaii, and I bought Michael Jackson's, the Jackson 5 album, ABC, and that's where it all started. Okay, that's all.
Wow, okay. Well, we're going to get into that more. But we want, we'd let our guests talk and start at the very beginning of their lives, where they were born, as you just heard, he's from the Philippines, and how he made it to the United States and how he got into music and as a disc jockey and his development and the roles he played later on in the development of the hip hop scene. Mr. Nasty Ness Rodriguez on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. You got the floor, my brother.
Okay, I can talk now. I'm sorry, man.
Yes, sir.
I just love talking. I'm doing real well, man. So I know your real name, but should I just call you Disco Daddy? It's kind of weird.
Everybody does. I know. We all got these
I've
names.
I've never called you Disco Daddy.
Well, people meet you, do they call you Nasty or do they call you Nasty Ness? You see what I'm saying?
You know what's weird? Yeah. You're right. Okay, now that you put it that way, cool. But anyway, man, I just want to say thank you for letting me be on your show, man. I mean, you know, I've hung out with you many times, and now that you got this
thank you for accepting this really popular show.
Yeah, thank for you. Sure, man. Well, you know, it's bigging up, West Coast hip hop history, and I was definitely there from the beginning, man. And, I'm not in a wheelchair yet. I don't use a cane yet, but okay. I am old enough. I am qualified and old enough to be there.
Well, we want you to start at the beginning where you're born and everything. And so you're going to help us illuminate the scene up north. Everybody, when we talk about hip hop history, it tends to gravitate toward California, Southern California, and then to a lesser extent, the Bay Area because of Too Short and a few other hip-hop things that were going on in the late 80s. But rarely is any light shined on the North. You see what I'm saying? Seattle, Washington, any of the states, Oregon, like that, the things that were happening. And I know you have knowledge, so lead us up there all through that, through the 80s, everything that you did, but start at the very beginning of your life, Mr. Nasty Ness Rodriguez.
Oh, man, the very beginning? Well, if you want me to start at the very beginning, we might need like 5 hours. So I'm going to edit it and start from where. Okay. Well, you know, it's true. Seattle back in those days, no one really knew what Seattle was. You know, because I remember trying to shop Sir Mix-a-Lot's music in New York. I went to all the record labels. Went to the new music seminar.
What years are we talking now?
Oh, boy. This is talking early, like 1982, 83-ish, around there.
Okay.
And I remember it was either the legendary Frankie Crocker or the legendary Mr. Magic. They are two of the prominent DJs that were on radio back then. Both have passed away. But one of those two, and I think it was Mr. Magic, who I really looked up to because he had a hip hop. No, it wasn't Mr. Magic because there wasn't a hip hop show. It was Frankie Crocker. That's right.
Right.
Frankie Crocker.
He was a go-to guy back then. Yes.
Yeah, boy, that guy, you know, when he talked and you heard his voice, woo, boy, he sounded so dope on the air. And I used to record his shows and try to imitate his sound. My sister lived in New York.
He's the reason I became a DJ. I grew up in Harlem listening to Frankie Crocker on WWRL, the Big RL AM, 1965, 66, 67, way before there was a WBLS. He was the man from the 60s. Yeah, Frankie Crocker was dope. Yes, sir.
So anyway, so I played this track from Sir Mix-a-Lot, and everyone was listening. And then he said to me, he goes, no one's going to like it except if you're in Seattle. And what's up in Seattle, Ness? And he goes, horses, rain, and green grass. Is that it? And I'm like, oh, God.
Frankie Crocker
said that to me. Oh, I felt so dizzy. I was like, oh, man. But you know what? So that's how people looked at Seattle though back then, because even before I moved to Seattle, I never really knew what Seattle was. You know, right. There was a show on TV that you probably know because you're old enough like me. It was called Here Comes the Bride, and it starred Bobby Sherman. See, a lot of people don't know who Bobby Sherman is, but he had
Bobby Sherman, that's the guy that made the Swim with produced by Sly Stone.
No, I'll even sing it to you. He did, Julie, 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 do you love me? Remember that?
Oh,
the top 40. Come on, don't be shy, man. You know you liked it.
I've heard it before.
He was on a show called Here Comes the Bride, and it was based in Seattle. And if you watched the show, all you saw were like green trees, loggers, and horses. So I was like, oh, man, I can't believe my mom is moving me to Seattle where it looks like that. So I'm assuming everyone who watched that TV show thought that was what Seattle was like. But, my first radio job, I got getting paid because I did go to college radio for a year at W Community College. The advice was given to me that you need to at least experience what it's like being on the mic, making mistakes, you know, queuing up the records, doing the weather. And I just thought, well, if you just had a good voice, you could be a DJ, but it was just more to it than that. Mm. So in 1980, a station was about to start called K-Fox, and it used to be a station called, it used to be 1250 KYC, which was the urban black radio station in Seattle, the only one. And then they got sold. So there were all these protests in front of the building protesting. And then so K-Fox was born. And in the beginning of the format of K-Fox, oh, my God, they were playing the Beatles. So you can imagine the urban community being so mad, you know. So they ended up going back to black R&B music, and I just used to go up there. I wanted the job so badly, so I just used to go up there, you know, trying to get a job. And finally, they gave me a job there, and I wasn't on the air. It was called a board operator, and that's where you would just, you know, press the music, press the commercials. You know, you wouldn't talk. You just board up, and then. And then 6 months later, it was the best year of my life back in 1980. I got to do the weather report, and it was so cool because you get to pre-record your voice. So I called like hundreds of my friends and go, hey, put it on 1250 K-Fox. I'm about to be on the air. And so you heard me. So I remember what I said. I said K-Fox forecast. Rain today, highs today of 68, low tonight, 39. Here on the Beat of the Fox, 1250 K-Fox. And I was like, I'm on this radio station.
Big time.
That's how.
Big time.
Yeah. And then that turned into me, doing like overnight. And, you know, I used to spend my summers, and I kind of still do, but now that I'm old, I don't have time to. But when I was younger, I spent my summers in New York City because my sister lived there, and we being Filipino, my mom always wanted me to stay close with my sister and keep the relationship close. Right. And she would fly me to New York, and I would spend like a month in New York. And that's how I learned about, remember, KISS, WKTU, 92KTU. It was a station. It had Paco, Carlos de Jesus, Al Bandiero, mixes on the air, the Latin Rascals, Jelly Bean Bonitas. And I said, man, this is so cool. How do they make these songs all sound like one song they're mixing? And just so happened, my sister's best friend, her name was Ann Tripp, did the traffic reports there. I think she still does traffic reports on some station in New York. But anyway, so we went up there, and I got to meet, you know, the DJs. And so that's where it all began, was that.
Right.
And then they would play a few rap stuff on there. And what I did is I would buy vinyl, and then I would take it back to Seattle. And then my boss let me play it on a show that we created called Fresh Tracks. And Fresh Tracks was really a show that played the newest. Let's say if Rick James had something new, but it wasn't really out yet, I would play that. And then I would play like a new, Sugar Hill Gang song or Curtis Blow mixed in with a new Earth, Wind & Fire song. It was all brand new music. And then we noticed the ratings were really high for the show, but everyone kept requesting to hear rap music. So Fresh Tracks turned into an all rap show for, I think it was 90 minutes long. And the first hour, I play all the new stuff that I brought back from New York or I bought at Tower Records. And then the last 30 minutes, I would do a master mix. And boy, that's pretty much, you know.
Hold it right there. What effect, because you're the first person I've been able to ask from somebody outside of L.A., what effect did the Rapper's Delight have when it dropped in Seattle, Washington in 79? I know you weren't on the air then, but you were living in the town. Can you give us a flavor of how that changed? Because I'm sure, just like every place else, R&B, funk was ruling, George Clinton, and all that. And here comes this Rapper's Delight. What was that like at that moment?
Well, I think at that time it was so different. I think what really made that record hit up in Seattle was because they used the Chic Good Times, and that song was like so popular. And then just to hear someone talking over that made it even more popular. But when they came to perform in Seattle, they were opening up for some R&B group. That's the first time you ever saw a DJ on stage, and the DJ was Curtis Blow. Wow. I don't know if you knew that. He was their DJ. I said, it was him, yeah. And you never seen a DJ. Like, what is he doing, you know? But it ended up becoming a humongous hit. And I remember my guy was on the radio at the time, and he said, hey, man, they've got like a 8-minute version. So whenever I have to use the restroom, because he was playing vinyl, he plays that long version. And then he goes, use the restroom. And I go, okay, I'll have to remember that if I ever get a job on the radio. So, song and wait, there's another, but what really played a big effect with rap, I don't know if you want to call it rap, but Double Dutch Bus by Frankie Smith. Yeah. Man, you know, because I remember all my friends, you know, they would go like, here's a new wizard, you go, Gizmo in, you know, and it's like, hey, you, where you going? It's like, if you didn't understand that, you weren't hip, you know? And because I grew up in a predominantly black community, and my school was like 80% black, you know, so I grew up with the brothers, man. Honestly, I was Filipino, but boy, I thought I was black.
We're all black.
Yeah,
because you were hit to the pig Latin. You were hit to pig Latin, and that's what you refer to.
Pig Latin. I can speak pig Latin. Yeah.
Yeah. So you were here for that. Well, I hear you. So it had an impact in Seattle. Mm-hmm. Now,
yes.
What were some of the early, do you remember some of the early manifestations of that? Were there any hip-hop club? Did breakdancing become popular or pop-locking? Again, what was the flavor among the young people as this new music started rolling up through Seattle from 79 on into the early 80s?
Well, what it was with movies like Breakin' coming out, Beat Street, all that, you know. The breakdancing movement started in Seattle too, and I just remember because I was on the radio, stereo shops would hire me out to bring my turntables, and they would have breakdancing contests, and the winner would receive, you know, a new record player, a new boombox. I think at that time,
wow,
the big thing was those big boomboxes, the big ones,
right? You know? Right.
So
radio theme stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so I remember doing that, and I just remember two of my most popular songs when I would play for breakers were Art of Noise, Beatbox, Harry Hancock, Rocket. Those two, whenever I hear that, those two, it just brings back a lot of good memories.
Okay, do you have any early memory of any of the hip hop personalities or groups or rappers that may have sprung out of Seattle?
You mean artists from Seattle or songs that hit?
Yeah,
that
came about during that time. Because see, I'm trying to dig back. We know basically what was happening in L.A. and the Bay Area in the early '80s. But again, Seattle, Washington is very close to the Bay Area. There's a lot of travel goes on back and forth between there, and radio stations predominantly were the way music traveled back then. So I'm assuming that the development in Seattle, once rap records come out, you get some rappers that spring up from somewhere, or you get some rap groups that start making names for themselves. So are there any that I'm not familiar with, or my audience?
Well, before Sir Mix-a-Lot, there was a group called the Emerald Street Boys, and Emerald meaning green because Seattle is a green town, the green trees, everything's green. They're called the Emerald Street Boys, and it was three guys in the group, Captain Crunch, Sugar Bear, and Sweet J. And
they ended up
81, 82, around there.
Okay.
And they ended up doing the intros to my Fresh Tracks rap show. They would do like a 60 second, and then they would rap on it. You know, they would use 5 minutes of funk instrumental and rap over it, you know, and mention my name, K Fox name, and their name. So they were the first rap group to come out of Seattle, were the Emerald Street Boys. During that time, there was another guy looming around doing gigs, and I kept hearing his name, Sir Mix-a-Lot, and I was like, who's this guy? Not knowing that we both went to the same high school together, but I was 2 years older than him, but he was another guy, and those are the two that really stood out. And there was one guy out of Portland named Vitamix, and I helped him get a deal on Profile Records. It didn't really do well, but you know, it was kind of cool to meet the owner of Profile Records, and he gave us a record deal. Mm-hmm. So, Vitamix.
Wow. Okay. So, Seattle was popping. Your career started taking off.
And I, you know, when I did it, man, the only reason why I really got into radio, because I hated going to school. I almost didn't graduate. The only reason why this is a true story, and it's an inspiring story, because the only reason why I graduated from high school was because my mom had cancer, and her last wish was to see me graduate. So that last year of my senior year, I really did my best, and I graduated. She passed away, so she never got to see what happened to me, but she saw me graduate. So that was the nice thing.
Yes, that's beautiful. Yeah. Okay, that's beautiful, man. Okay. Mm-hmm. Where did you get the name, And how did you choose the name Nasty Ness? There's got to be a story in there, too.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you Disco Daddy because you just love disco music like Village People?
You know, I'm going to tell you. When I auditioned for my first job at a disco, my first child was on his way. My lady was pregnant. And I was driving past, just like you, I was in college for radio broadcast. Okay? But there wasn't enough money. Naturally in L.A., you're not going to jump off on radio and make the market just like that unless you're lucky. So I'm driving past a club and had a sign outside saying DJ wanted, and I needed extra money. My first baby was on the way, so I went in, I auditioned from the guy. And while I'm in the club auditioning, I'm from New York. I grew up with Frankie Crocker, and I start putting the little rhymes out about the club. It was called The Showcase. Nice to see your face. We're going to rock all night here at The Showcase. You know, little things like that. And the guy said, I like you. This is 1976. He said, I like you. I like, you know, your style. And that was DJ's rap. Jocko, as far as I knew, from what I grew up, DJ's rap. They didn't like rap like what we think of rap now. But they had little verses they would say, you know, sock it to me, mom, whatever. They had little rhymes. And Frankie had a bunch of them. So he said, what you going to call yourself? You can start this Saturday. I said, well, I'm about to have my first child. And this is my first job in the disco. I'm going to call myself Disco Daddy. Just like that. Wow. That's how that came about. 76, my first job, my first audition, April 76. My little girl was born June 76, Kalila, my oldest baby. And it stuck ever since.
Well, so I like
tell
that
us
too.
Your story, Ness.
Well, real quick, I'm thinking you could have been called Disco Duck, but I like Disco Daddy better.
It was just off the cuff thing. I had never really thought about it. I was going to audition, and first of all, you know, when you audition for things like that, in the back of your mind, you say, "Well, I may not even get the job." So you don't mentally put yourself all the way into thinking up a name and all of that. You know what I'm saying? And so when he said that, he caught me off guard, and I just said, "Well, you know, this is my first time. My first time with dad in a disco daddy." And he said, "That sounds cool." And luckily, along the years, I've never met anybody else till the internet came along, and then I see there's guys in Europe who are DJs who call themselves Disco Daddy or whatever, but none of them were rappers and all this thing. You see what I'm saying? So where I live at, I never ran into another Disco Daddy. So one reason I like it was always different. You still got to tell a disco.
Okay, well, back in, let's say, 78, 79, you know, the popular words, the slang was like jive, in a minute, you know, stuff like that. And just like saying fresh, you know, like that. So if you did something real cool or dope, a lot of people would say, dang, that's nasty, you know? So I got it because two things. One, you know, I've been into martial arts since I was 13 years old. And my kicks, I used to be able to do these high kicks, although never use high kicks because someone can easily grab your leg and throw you on the ground and beat you up.
Right.
Because I experienced it. So anyway, but I used to be really good with it. It looked really fancy. Matter of fact, what's his name? Flash. He looks like a kind of guy who, like, at that age would show off wearing kung fu shoes and doing the flying side kicks. So when people would refer to me as, dang, that guy's nasty.
Wow,
and
I got it.
I also worked in a health club called Pacific Nautilus. And in that year, free weights were popular for bodybuilders, but Nautilus was like the new thing, machines to work out on. And I would work out people on it. And I would work out like the Seahawks players. They would come in and they go, I would give them really hardcore workouts and go, so the owner goes, wow, you're nasty when it comes to workouts. then he goes, man, nastiness. Nastiness. Oh, okay. And then I go, I like that. I like that. So, but when I used it on the radio, I didn't use that name. I used my real name. I used Nestor Rodriguez. You know, because I thought, if I use nasty, people might think I'm being like a pervert. So what made me change my mind was people would call up on the request lines or meet me at appearances, and they would call me Mr. Rodriguez, and I'm only like 18 years old, calling me Mr. Rodriguez, because it sounds like I'm saying Mr. Rodriguez, but my name is Nestor Rodriguez. And I didn't like that because it made me feel really old. It's like, well, why don't we try Nasty Ness? And we would get a few complaints, like, you know, because to some people, adults, they thought it was profanity, saying Nasty Ness. But it just stuck with me, man. And well, I've been Nasty Ness since 1979, man. It's just like, how long have you been Disco Daddy? Since 76? 76, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you got a few years on me.
Well, what do you think now? You've watched the development of hip-hop over the years. Naturally, no one thought it would become a worldwide phenomenon. But what do you think of the progression of hip-hop from what we knew as hip-hop when we started out in the business to now? And what are your thoughts on the different types of the mumble rap, trap, all the type of things? What is your overview of the present hip-hop scene contrasted with when we began?
When I first began, it was so new that audiences either loved it or they were writing in and saying it's a fad, it won't last, take it off. Mm. But I predicted, I wrote it down somewhere, I predict in 20 years, it's going to be the biggest thing in the world. It's going to be, people are going to make a living off of it. And it came true, you know. But I just said that because I was trying to be all tough and stuff, but I really didn't know. I was like, oh, man, over 20 years, I'm right. and it sounds right. And, man, you know, I've been through it all. I've heard everything from meeting and seeing Treacherous 3. All those guys in the early days, because I went to New York, I met a lot of those cats. I met Mantronix. I've been on tour with Public Enemy because I was with Sir Mix-a-Lot. We toured with them. And then on the West Coast, you know, watching hip-hop grow, here's an interesting story. Our first show with Sir Mix-a-Lot was in Oakland. And so we had to rent a car at Hertz Rent-A-Car. And that's when O.J. Simpson was doing commercials. So we rented a car and then we drove to the Bay Area, and it was at a place called the Shrine Auditorium. And I was like, who are we opening up for? Shrine, and they said who it was. And I never heard the guy's name before. None of us have. So we performed, and there were like gangster girls in there looking at me, mean mugging me. And I was like, man, I don't like being here, man. So we performed and they were cool. And then when the main headliner came on, this guy was on stage, and then we thought he was the worst rapper in the world because all he kept saying was, "Biatch!" At the end of the song. Oh, my gosh. And then like 6 months later, I go, gosh, that's the same guy we opened up for. He was on, I think, 75 Girls was the label, and he blew up. I ended up playing his record on my show. Because I remember that guy, and he kept saying, biatch. Every time he said that word, the whole audience would scream. Because, you know, that word is not something we know at that time we really used in our vocabulary.
Right.
But it wasn't NWA. It was too short. He took that word to a new level, man. And but we were laughing like, man, this clown, who's this guy? And we ended up becoming friends. We were actually on a panel together in New York at the New Music Seminar. And I remember he was really young. And I looked at his watch, and this guy was sporting a Rolex. I was going, gosh, wow. I want to be famous like that one day.
Yep. What year was this that you did this concert?
Maybe 80. It was before NWA and Rod Neal. Maybe 85 was. I think we didn't even have an album out yet. Obviously, our body wasn't even out yet. But yeah, he was big. He was big out there. So I've seen him come up. I've seen NWA come up. You know what?
I'm not a huge... De La Soul.
I remember I was at a conference in Atlantic City, and all the record label reps, they go, "Hey, that's Nasty Nets. We need to talk to him, man, so he'll play our record." So I remember two of those guys just sitting at a table. One of the guys had a toothbrush in his mouth, and he wasn't like, it wasn't like he was brushing his teeth. He just had it in his mouth, playing with it in his mouth.
Right,
and I remember meeting them, not knowing what they really sounded like, but they gave me their album, the record, and me, myself, and I, and after I heard it, I go, "Oh, shoot, that's Parliament in it." The sampling wasn't a big thing yet, you know?
right.
Except for Good Times on Rapper's Delight. But yeah, man, and they're really quiet, and that was the first time I met them, and we became friends ever since then. I remember Queen Latifah giving me her record and walking around wearing jeans and a white T-shirt, and just she was just really cool, man. You know, a lot of these cats, but I've seen a lot of these cats come up. And as far as the new ones now, you know, like, well, I don't even know who to name, man, because I don't even know their names, man. I just know what they sound like, because they all sound the same, you know?
Yeah, I see Young Thug, all of that. I hear you. I was just wondering, you know, but because basically very few people like yourself have an expanse of one at a time where you're able to see the change. And you remember what it was like in the beginning of hip hop. So I always ask people who've been around a long time what their view is. You've got, in other words, a panoramic view of the music scene, and you're deeply involved as a DJ. Now, are you still on the air?
You know what? I was briefly online on a station called PowersRadio.com, and they shut it down. I really miss being on the radio. That's, you know, if you put a mic in front of me, that's my first love. I love being on the radio, and I love playing old school stuff. You put a camera in front of me, I love acting because I got into acting. I was in a couple of movies that did pretty well. One of them is probably one of the ones your favorite probably was House Party 4. It was the one that Ken played wasn't in.
Okay. I like all the House Party movies.
You don't know.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm going to love to replay that and check you out, man. So what is Nico Rodriguez doing now?
What am I doing now? Shoot. You know, since 1985, you know, I had to figure out a way to push Sir Mix-a-Lot's record so we can get some airplay, and that's where I learned how to work with radio, commercial radio.
Right.
And once commercial radio changed, where they had to tell DJs what to play, the DJs didn't have freedom anymore, I realized that college radio, they can play whatever they want to play. So, you know, I'm still surviving. Labels hire me out to push their records to college radio. Because even though they may air only once a week or so, at least it gets played, you know, and people get to hear it. But you know, sometimes it's hard turning down records because money can be tight. But there's one cat I promoted I really hated. I couldn't stand it. He goes, "Come on, man. All we got is like a few $100, man. I know it's not much, but we really need your help." And it ended up becoming a humongous hit. The Trap Queen. Who did that one? You know, the guy with the one eye. I can't remember his name.
I'm lost, but I'm listening to you.
Trap Queen. Well, anyway, the name of the song was Trap Queen. Can't believe I can't remember the artist's name. Anyway, when he has like one eye.
So he sees
pictures. That's why he's always wearing something over his eye. And I'm sorry, I can't remember his name, but I
don't worry about
really. Yeah, well,
Trap Queen. Y'all can Google it out there, and you'll be able to find out who this cat is.
Okay.
That when you meet artists like that, back in the day, and they come to you, how did you judge? What criteria do you use before you throw some weight behind them to go behind? You know, like someone's like, first of all, is he still active?
You know what? I don't think he's active as far as putting on anything new. I mean, that guy is set for life with Baby Got Back, because they played in in all these movies, TV shows, and, you know, he gets paid for that. So
right.
he's set, okay. man. He was smart. He owns all his publishing on everything.
Wow.
And that's
right
something
on.
A lot of people, you know, when we're young, we didn't learn anything like that, but he learned. And, you know, so he's doing really well. We don't really speak to each other as much anymore.
Right.
But I know he's doing real well because he's got like two big houses and,
wow.
you know, and rolling
great.
The Lamborghini. So
yeah,
I think he's doing okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What does the future hold for Mr. Ness Rodriguez? What are your plans, aspirations, and dreams? Because I know as long as a creative person like yourself is living, you have those. What are you planning for yourself for the next few years?
Well, you know, I made a lot of money at one part of my life, but like I said, when you're young, you don't learn like what IRS really does. Like you're supposed to pay taxes, you know? So I learned the hard way, and I ended up owing, and I still owe them. I'm not going to lie. I still owe them because they might be listening. They might be listening to the show. Just let them know that, yeah, I do know. So I pay them back every month.
Well, you do plan to pay the IRS, so you can say that much.
Oh, I pay every month. With Sir Mix-a-Lot, he was lucky. He, the Pussycat Dolls sampled that's a song that goes, "Don't you wish your boyfriend was hot like me?"
Oh,
they sampled
yeah,
that off of Mix-a-Lot's album, and it was called Swass. And the original chorus was, "Don't you wish your girlfriend was Swass? Oh, no, boyfriend was Swass like me." And mm-hmm. I called the mix and his manager. Go, "Hey man, this group stole your sample." I mean, at that time, no one's ever heard of Pussycat Dolls. But boy, he got millions off of that. They settled out in millions. So he was able to pay IRS off, he told me. So he's good to go now, man. So unlike me. So if anyone's listening, we can set up a GoFundMe page. Yeah, GoFundMe my IRS. But the future, I'm not going to lie. I'm going to be 57 years old. Man, you know, everything I said I wanted to do, I've done. But right. one of my goals is to be in a regular TV series or in another movie. I just want to be known all over, not just for hip-hop, but as an actor.
Right.
You know, Bruce Lee was like a hero I looked up to. And so I kind of like try to follow in his footsteps. And it's just when I pass away, you know, even though a few people call me legend now, I really want to be a legend. Because being that I'm Filipino, I'm really proud that I was able to come to the States. You know, I wasn't a citizen yet. Donald Trump wasn't president yet. So I was able to become an American citizen. And, man, I love being in the States, man. And, you know, but I got to tell you, one thing that I learned that I like to share with a lot of these young kids is when you're young, you think you're invincible.
Yeah.
And I used to smoke a lot of cigarettes. I used to drink a lot. I used to do a lot of cocaine and all that. And
right.
I used to have so many girls. And I tell you, it'll all catch up to you. Because now I'm like dealing with diabetes 2, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure. But you know
that's
what?
Not funny, but I hear you.
I know.
Yeah, funny, but you're right.
I'm blessed to still be alive. You know, but it's just maybe God kept me alive so I can to tell other, you know,
there
people
you
just to stop, you know, because I
used to
smoke a lot of cigarettes. A lot of cigarettes.
Man.
Matter of fact, after this show, I might have to smoke one, man, because I'm so happy to be on your show.
Don't do it. Nasty Ness Rodriguez on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop and R&B. I got to ask you, during the time when you were hot on the radio, were there any particular artists that you were lucky and fortunate enough to be the first to break?
Oh, I broke a lot of artists, Disco
Can
Daddy.
You
I mean, if you came to my...
Drop the names on us, man, so we know what was happening and who to, you know, give their the...
Well, in my room alone, I've got like over 50 plaque, gold platinum plaques on my wall. So I'm in my bedroom. So the plaques I had in my room, I had Jody Wiley, Pebbles, Chic. Well, he gave, even though they were big array, Nile Rodgers still gave me a plaque. Alexander O'Neal, De La Soul, Club Nouveau, Loonies. Now, I'm just looking at my wall. Dana Dane, Eric B., Gangstar, Digital Underground, Into Deep, Whitney Houston. Okay, you're gonna love this one. Michael Jackson for Bad, and Magic Mike. So those are the ones hanging on my wall. So I don't want people to come up and find where I live because they're going to try to steal it. Oh, Public Enemy.
Ness Rodriguez, one of the power players in Seattle, Washington. Those are serious groups. Those are serious plaques on your wall. You were a serious player, and we're glad to have you on our show to illuminate a part of history, hip-hop history, and just simple radio history that very few people aren't aware of because, again, most of the attention, if you're on the West Coast, shoots down to Southern California. But obviously, you – and what station were you with when you did those, when you were breaking those records?
Oh, gosh, I was with 1250 K-Fox. I was with Cube 93 Commercial Radio in Seattle. Mm-hmm. I did guest mixes on Bay Area's KMEL. I used to do mixes on LA's KDAY. I used to send it on a reel to reel. So those are some big stations, man, that was on.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
This has been one of the most fascinating interviews I've done. And
that to all your guests, man.
No, not really. Because, again, most of them are either from around here or from New York. You know what I'm saying? So there's very few surprises that they can give me, you know, as far as what you're telling me information. No one has been able to tell me about Washington, Seattle, Portland, Oregon, what was happening during those early years except you. You're the first person to interview to give me some light and my audience some light on what was going on, what we call way up north.
Well, I got to tell you, one of the biggest lessons that I learned, aside from IRS, is if you're going to be on an artist record, a guest artist on it, you're going to get points off of it. Get points off of it because I did the thing for Eazy-E back then, but no one knew who he was yet, and he ended up going multi-platinum, and it was a song called Radio. I'm at the very ending with Dr. Dre. It's probably one of the most popular spots in the whole song. And just imagine if I got points off of that, I could pay off the IRS by now and live large. so I'm going to end it with that. Yeah.
And you'd be racing Sir Mix-a-Lot in your own Lamborghini.
Oh, shoot. I'm not in the Lamborghini. I'm in the Rolls Royce, man. I like to drive slow. I'm totally opposite. Yes, sir. I'm like a lowrider, man.
Great. Thank you so much, man.
Disco Daddy, man. It's a pleasure to do this, man. I really appreciate it. I had so much fun.
It's an honor for me. My audience, you've been listening to Mr. Nasty Ness Rodriguez on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. We want to tell him thank you. We appreciate you doing our show. We appreciate what you've done and your contribution to hip hop and, again, in music and radio and records in general. And maybe in the future, we'd like to have you back again on the show. If you have something else you want to say or you got to do, give us a call.
When I end up becoming big on a TV show or something, I'll come back on. So I need to end this by saying to everybody, peace, love, and hip-hop unity. And I have to say to all my Filipinos out there, oh, maraming salamat, I love you. I love you, Disco Daddy, you're the best. I love you. Mahal kita.
Thank you, Des.
All right.
Thank you, Des.
Take care.
All right. Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop and R&B. We're out. Peace.
Woo. So, wasn't it a great show? Come back next week. Every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Central Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop Show. Man, it's a great one. Epic. See you next week. Bye.